one you want to talk.
Jan Ackerman is
yes.
She got a job with the Division of Elections, but she can't do those things.
Oh, yeah.
Charles Dedeker.
The Judiciary Committee has come to order. Senator Strzelczewski has been in and out and will be here. Senator Joseph and myself are here, and we will constitute a quorum. My understanding is Mr. Dunnigan is the nominee of the governor, or the through the system, I suppose, the for Alaska Public Offices Commission. And this time we are also joined by the chairman of the State Affairs Committee, Senator Booth. Would you like to make an initial statement, Mr. Dunnigan? And we'd like to exchange places with you so far as weather and location goes for the next few days.
Well, that'd be fine with me. I don't really have a prepared statement. I guess the only thing I would say is by way of introduction, I think Joe and I have known each other a little bit, primarily through one of my partners, Howard Tricky. But all of my work in election law has been representing candidates, and I did some work for Cooper. I think that's how I came to his attention when the vacancy came up. And as you probably know, I was party appoints two members, the Republican Party appoints two members, and the four members choose a fifth member. And I am a proposed appointee of the Democratic Party. And I guess that's all I could really say is by way of introduction. I've worked for a lot of candidates to the extent that I would go on the commission with a point of view. It would be primarily that I've gotten in working for candidates. And you've got my resume there. And
yes.
Other than that, I'll just open up for any questions that the various gentlemen might have.
Senator Strzelczewski is here now, too. Joe, do you have questions? Yeah. Senator Joseph is now going to ask you a question, Mr. Dunnigan.
Good morning, Chuck. I first of all want to express to you my appreciation for your willingness to serve in this very onerous and often thankless position. I do have a couple of questions which are spurred by some requests from colleagues of ours who had some concerns that they wanted to put on record, and as a courtesy for them, I will pose these questions. Are you presently counsel in any matters pending before the Public Offices Commission, as far as you are aware?
Yeah, I think so. I presently represent Dave Walsh. He is an announced candidate for mayor of Anchorage. And I've talked to Dave, and if I am confirmed and everything comes final, I will resign. I'm also counsel to some political action committees, not in the way of a retainer, but if they have questions, I'm the guy they usually call. I have prepared a letter to the various political action committees that I've done work for, and if I have, if everything comes final, I'll send out a form letter to those clients telling them that I'm no longer able to give them advice. I had a long talk with Peter Pittman about conflicts of interest, you know, what our law firm can do. We will be publishing a list of our clients as required. One of the ongoing questions that we have, Joe, and that it is thoroughly and totally, I think, clear in my mind. It's clear to me that I'm out of the election business. I'm out of politics for the time that I'm on the this commission. That I'm just out of it. I don't give advice. I don't counsel. I stay out of the politics. I don't give donations. I'm out. And to a certain extent, that's a relief. So that has been some good. The flip side of that, of course, is that while my firm is not at all a political firm, we have no political contracts whatsoever, our clients are, to a large extent, interested in political issues. For example, we represent the community college teachers. Now, and there, of course, the unification issue is a big issue, and at least it was when I left. I assume it's still a serious issue. But to what extent, the question I put to FETA is like, when we have that as an issue, and when our clients come to us and say, well, we want to formulate a ballot proposition, you know, we get into those kinds of questions. Now, my feeling at this point is that I can still work in that area, in those areas, and that there is no conflict. However, if the teachers or if any of their advisors come under scrutiny from the Alaska Public Officers Commission, that I will have already disclosed my work with those groups, and I would, of course, be recuse myself from any consideration that they might come up with, or they might come under from the commission, if the commission ever, if the staff ever brings a question before the commission involving those groups. Same course is true with Dave. I think that to the extent that the mayor's rage is not over and won't be over until next fall, that I'm pretty much out of it. Not only with Dave, but I think with all candidates. I don't think that it would look, it would appear, I think there would be the appearance of impropriety if, after having worked on Dave's campaign, I sat in judgment on any other campaigns, at least until the election's over. I toss that out for you. I'm interested in any comments you might have on that as well, because it's one of the issues that Steve and I had talked about, scratched our heads over. Some things are obvious and some things are not as obvious. And I want to do, I want to, if I get on the commission, I want to be sure that, that it's clean and that there is no, the last thing the governor needs and the last thing anybody needs is to have a commissioner on there that has any ethical questions. And I want to avoid that to every extent possible.
Well, thank you very much, Chuck. I'll tell you what. Was one of the things that prompted the question. A colleague of mine just handed me the agenda prepared for the April 29-30 APOC meeting. It's called Status of Complaints. And as my colleagues will allow me to say this, as a parenthetical aside, I note that my name appears on the agenda. This is the second time since you were a prospective commissioner that the commission has had an agenda in which I am referred to and as to which I had no notice. Before the commission met. This happened in November, and again I find out on May 1 that this happened on April 29th, and I think it needs to be corrected, but that isn't really the point of the inquiry. On the same agenda, there is a heading called Cases Which Have Been to the Commission But Where Some Final Item Remains, and then there's the reference to number 85-2 in the matter of Clossie, Norris, McConkie, CPA collection pending and McConkie hearing scheduled for June 22. I'm asking at the request of a colleague whether you are counsel to anybody involved in that matter.
I was, but I'm not, and I'll tell you how that works. I represented Joe Flood in his unsuccessful election bid against Mr. Boo, who I understand is there now. And after the election, we brought suit against Norris and Clossie. They had produced a flyer, as you may recall, alleging that Joe had basically family and child support impropriety, and it had hit the election district on the eve of the election. And we got about far enough to determine that there was some substantial mystery about where some of the money they used came from, and we took the deposition of Norris and Clossie. Joe and I had a long talk and decided that funding this litigation privately was, it was a big buck. There was going to be, we could tell there was going to be some heavy hitting coming down the pipe. So Joe decided to back out, and we dismissed that piece of litigation, I think with prejudice. However, what we then did is we took the deposition of Norris and Clossie, and we took them to the Public Officers Commission and said, here, look at this and see what you think. And I asked Steve about this. This was a couple of 85. We're talking, Mitch, when was the election? I mean, this was a long time ago. It seems like it was a couple of years. But anyway, what I understand is, and this is just from talking with Theta, that, well, first off, since we took this stuff to the commission, I've been out of it. I have not been an active participant in the controversy or in the litigation or in any of the hearings. There has been, the commission went ahead and processed it, and I believe that Norris was given an $8,000 fine, and he continued to refuse to divulge the source of the money. And then that has since then been referred for criminal prosecution, but nothing has happened. Now, I think that's, again, that's secondhand, but I think that's the status of the controversy. But my only involvement really was representing Joe, and immediately after the election, filing suit and taking the initial steps to determine as much as we could what happened or who was involved. And we hit that brick wall, and when Norris simply said, I'm not going to tell you where the money came from, and that's when we took the day clock and left it.
Well, there's also reference in the same agenda for yesterday and the day before to a number 84-8, McConkie versus Flood, with the notation CPAs collected, question whether candidate return of excess is viable request. Would you recuse yourself from participating in any matters involving those designated items, McConkie versus Flood or the Clossy matters, if you were confirmed to the commission?
Suspect I have real strong opinions, and they were generated as an advocate for Joe Flood, and it would just be inappropriate for me to put it differently. I have made up my mind on a number of issues involving that campaign, and it would be inappropriate for me to sit as an unbiased commissioner and try to make a decision on that. Couldn't do it. Wouldn't try.
Thank you very much, Chuck, and good luck to you.
Other senators are here now, too. Senator Alford has joined us. He's a member of the committee. Senator Boot is seeking the floor. If the members of the committee are not seeking the floor, I recognize Senator Boot. Mitch, you have the floor, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Dunnigan, I didn't. We know that it's appropriate. It would not be appropriate for you to do anything regarding these cases. But I didn't hear whether you a yes or a no when it comes to would you participate in them or not.
Did you have
a vote? Would you care to give me an answer?
I thought I was very clear about that, Mitch. No, I will not. I will recuse myself in those cases.
Okay, second question is, how do you view the relationship between the commission and the staff?
I'll tell you how I'm going to approach it. I'm not walking on this commission with the idea that I'm taking over the commission. I'm walking on the commission with the idea that I'm going to like learn about, there are other commissioners, not just one of them. And I want to see how things run. I want to see how they do things. I want to make sure that I understand the protocol among the various commissioners. I want to work with the other commissioners to get a cohesive approach to this. When it comes to the commission and staff, I have two thoughts. Number one, it's important to have a good staff, and I don't think you can have a good staff if you don't give them their heads to a certain extent. You've got to let them do what they do, and you've got to give them a certain amount of support. But in the final analysis, I'm the commissioner, and I think those of us who are commissioners have to take we have to take responsibility for what the commission is doing. And we have to take it personally, and we have to be sure that we have created clear policies, that the staff is, and the staff is following those policies. So, Mitch, to answer your question is that I'm going to spend some time getting my feet wet, and I'm going to listen to my staff people, because I've been on the other side of this, and I have had my problems with Ms. Pittman. Believe me. But I think overall she does a pretty good job. And I know there are people, perhaps you, who disagree strongly with that, but I think Peter Pittman does a fairly good job. But as a commissioner, I'm responsible for that. And for example, here Joe tells me that this is the second time he's been up for consideration and he hasn't had advance notice. If you'll pardon the expression, that's bullshit. That cannot happen. It just cannot happen. And this is a function that the commission has to give clear instructions to the staff. And the commission has to be able to and willing to back that up. Be sure that due process is given to the people that we're dealing with. You guys are in public life. And I think the commission has a very dramatic responsibility. Because the commission seems to get a lot of press, and I think it's very important that the commission not be grandstanding ever, that the commission itself doesn't have a job to do. It's public disclosure. And it's the disclosure that should get the attention, and not what the commission did Friday and so on and so forth. I really think that the emphasis has to be on getting the facts out and then letting the public process take its course. I don't think the commission itself, the staff, or the commissioners should be necessarily, I mean, we shouldn't be approaching this thing as anything that would make us individual celebrities, something like that. Did I stumble over and answer your question while I was wandering around there?
Well, Chuck, some of the problems we've had in the past, and I think you may be well aware of them, the staff puts things in front of the commission. The commission takes them a carte blanche. They look at one side of the story. They don't investigate and look into it. The commission themselves on the other side. As an example, I've been purged by them, something horrible, never been in front of them, never called in to even give another side of the story. Yet, I've been totally smeared. Now, that goes back into the confidentiality. That's a very important part of this whole thing. Whatever that commission gets should be pretty confidential until either you release somebody or you find him guilty and turn over to this attorney. And those are some of my problems that I would like to know how you're going to conduct yourself along those lines.
This has to finish itself.
Well, Mitch, if I'd been on the commission after the Joe Flood campaign, I certainly would have wanted to talk to you. But to answer your question seriously, let me just echo what I said and with regard to Senator Josephson. That I think it's a tough job on the commission. I think it's a tough thing. I think the commission has to be extremely courteous and extremely solicitous of the public officials that we deal with. But, Mitch, you know, I don't want to blow smoke at you and tell you that, I get on there, I'm going to be soft and easy. I think public disclosure is extremely important.
I never said that I wanted you to be that I wanted you to be, or anybody else wants you to be soft and easy. If you're going to be soft and easy, then there's no reason for you to be there. I'm just looking for fairness and the due process of all of the laws that protect a public official, period, and the same opportunity he gives that he's allowed to have. That's all that's necessary in this thing, without any partisanship involved.
Chuck?
But yeah, go ahead.
Go ahead. Mitch would like you to respond, and I have a question.
Partisanship, when I began to look over the commission and the structure of the commission, I was interested that the Democratic Party appoints two, the Republican Party appoints two in the government, or what they do is they suggest a range of appointees, and the governor appoints from the range. But it was interesting to me that it was actually the makeup of the committee, of the commission, and I'm not familiar with many government commissions, but this one I thought was somewhat unusual the way that it comes in. But yeah, I agree, it's a nonpartisan commission. It should be a nonpartisan commission. It has a nonpartisan job to do.
Well, just as a further comment in the end of my conversation, probably it's well to have nonpartisanship conditions on the commission. But the practice of partisanship is a little bit more prevalent in this commission than most others. I think you might be aware of that.
All I remember is that this is just an impression that I just felt like working for Sheffield, that things went a lot easier after he was elected. That was just an impression. I could be wrong about that.
What is it?
Huh?
I don't think anyone understood that statement.
That's okay.
I wouldn't bite into it either.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
Chuck, this is Joe again. And I think Senator Boone's question about the relation with staff is prompted maybe by a couple of comments that we received in testimony. You know, we've had some hearings this year on the Public Offices Commission and legislation that would make revisions. And frankly, I think we've decided as a committee under Senator Boone's chairmanship that the issues are pretty far-reaching and difficult, and if we don't have time during this session as we work towards adjournment to resolve them, and we'll probably be doing some interim work in that area to try to improve the operation of the commission. But during the hearings, there was testimony from Jean Rogers, whom you were appointed to replace, in which she stated that, this is almost a quotation, that the staff is the commission and the commission is the staff. And I think the concern, on the one hand, was from some senators that the staff was proceeding independently in its investigative role. I personally think probably the staff has to, because you can't have a quasi-judicial agency acting as both investigator, prosecutor, and judge. So I think there has to be a separation. But I guess that is the essence of my point, that the philosophy that the staff is the commission and the commission is the staff is not really very workable or doesn't give much comfort to people who may disagree with the staff and want the commission to act as an independent quasi-judicial body.
Well, my comment to that would be that, you know, if I thought this were a job that this required me to rubber stamp staff proposals, I wouldn't take it. I mean, why would I bother with it? I mean, one of the things that intrigues me about the job is that having worked in election law for a number of years, I've got a lot of background and a lot of opinions on how things can best be done, and what sorts of things are important, and what sorts of things should be left alone. And over time, I intend to sharpen and hone those opinions and hopefully convince the other commissioners and work with the other commissioners and sort of evolve a policy where the commission focuses on the more important, the more publicly important issues, and a lot of the minutia that has bogged down everybody's campaign and that seems to bog down the commission from time to time can be left. This may also involve some changes in the law. But I agree, when you start to fool with the election disclosure laws, they're interrelated, and there are numerous very important policy considerations at every step. It's not something that you can take lightly or take shortly. But I feel that the commissioners must be responsible. They are responsible. But you can't forget that as a commissioner, you know, I'm gonna get a reading, a stack of stuff to read. I'm going to meet 2 days every other month. And, you know, unless I'm willing to quit my job and go down there and run things, the opportunity for the kind of oversight that you guys are looking for really isn't there as a commissioner. I couldn't afford to oversee the commission. I mean, the commissioners sit in a policy position, and we make policy and we enforce policy. But the day-to-day working of the commission, I think, are always going to be pretty much staff. And I think it's a situation where some of you guys have a real problem with Theda Pippen, and you should know that I don't have a particular problem with Theda Pippen. I think she's been wrong on occasion. Everybody has. Overall, I think she does a reasonably good job. And, you know, if you want somebody to go down and fire Theda, I'm not your man. That's not on my agenda. Now, I'm not saying that I wouldn't ever do that, or that I wouldn't fire any staff member, or see to it that a staff member got terminated. But I'll be honest with you guys, that's not something that I'm taking with me, and not an intention that I have at this point. But on the flip side, if you guys can demonstrate to me that...
Mr. Dunnigan, that isn't the direction we were taking at all. It's difficult when you're not looking at somebody and we're not just looking across the table at each other. But I think that it's a far different question. Joe seeks to break in here, too.
I really do. First of all, everybody, Chuck, is looking around the table with astonishment. I don't think anybody here is asking that Theda Pittman be fired. I have no such desire, and I think that she does a good job in terms of her understanding of administrative process and probably the resources that she has at her command. There's no axis to grind here. As a matter of fact, the point I was making was the point you were making, I think, and that is that, in my opinion, there can't, insofar as any legislator thinks that that the commission should personally oversee every step of an investigation and personally be involved in the decision as to whether to issue a subpoena or not. I think that is not only unworkable, but it's improper, because then, as I said, you would be acting in a dual or triple capacity, both as judge, prosecutor, and investigator. So I think there has to be the separation, and I feel very strongly about that. The thrust of what I was saying was just the opposite. That is that your predecessor didn't seem to understand the need for separation. But I think I want to put on record that the issue of the personality of Theda Pittman is not before us and has nothing to do with this discussion.
Mr. Dunnigan, I think a lot of people that have come in contact with APOC sort of feel that the commission ought to be the first one to know the concerns and the charges made or not made by the staff, and they ought to meet in some privacy to discuss the merits of it and get the full picture before it hits the newspapers and so on. Why should you be charged and found guilty and tried in the press before the staff has informed, or before you maybe even informally have seen the charges? And that's bothering everybody. You don't even get the protection, which isn't very much of a grand jury situation where only one side is heard. And that is kind of the concern of those that have been through the mill, that you receive the materials, judge for yourself, say staff go get it, but that you not read the particulars in the paper before you even receive the materials and understand what the situation is. And to get right down to it, that's a big part of the problem that's been voiced in the State Affairs Committee for a year or so. Over.
I'm very sympathetic
with that. Senator Halford has a question now. Thanks very much for your response.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just kind of following that through, in a decade just about dealing with the APOC, I don't think I've ever had any problems with the APOC, although I don't think I've probably in that time spent in a cumulative total half of what the high Senate campaigns ran the last election. But we really are in a situation where essentially the cases are tried in a court of public opinion. And that really is where the impact of public disclosure has its major effect, and probably should have its major effect. But the real question is, at what point does information reach that court of public opinion, and is it essentially a staff effort, and does the information go out based on staff action, or does it go out based on specific commission approval and some kind of a real overview of that information chain, so that, in fact, a case that hasn't gone anywhere with the commission doesn't find itself in the front page of the newspapers and essentially get tried, convicted, executed, and the entire process gone through before the commission really deals with it at all?
Well, first, I'm real sympathetic to that concern, and I agree with the sentiments that have been voiced by the gentleman there today. Second, one of the problems is that the reports themselves aren't public. And from dealing with candidates, it's my impression that candidates go over each other's reports very carefully. And one campaign tactic is to file complaints before APOC and with the press release. So to a certain extent, let me back up. It's not the purpose of APOC, I think, to issue press releases and so on. And I think that APOC itself has to be very careful about getting involved in these problems. Elections get very bitter, they get very hotly contested, and the candidates take each other's reports and try to rip each other's pieces with them. Accusing someone of being the oil company stooge, accusing someone of being the labor, all these kinds of things go back and forth. But that's not the position of APOC. I think that APOC has to have the same position in investigative situations that most other agencies take, which is an open but matters under investigation. Just flat, don't talk about it.
There is no public comment in that period of time.
I think you're saying that the staff should not make any comment on a case before APOC, and that the comments should only come from members of the commission and only come after there's been adequate review. Is that what you're saying?
I would even go farther than that. My feeling is that as a member of the commission, be hesitant to make public comments, and I would encourage the other commissioners to be hesitant to make public comments, we would take actions not as singular individuals, but as a commission of five. And we would have a public opinion when there is need for one. And I think it's very much like quasi-judicial, that you know, what we have to say should be published in a formal opinion. And it should be there for everyone to see, everyone to examine, everyone to criticize if it is done well. But that should be our job. And then, like I said before, I'm not in favor of, this is not a grandstanding sort of job. This is a, you know, we are there to facilitate fair and honest public disclosure. And we don't do that by becoming the center of controversies. We do that by resolving controversies and issuing decisions in contested cases.
Yeah. Senator Joseph, thank you. Senator Hill.
Chuck, I want to go back to something that came up earlier and just tell you, and I think I do speak for other public officials in this regard. If I don't, I think the ones here at least can indicate that they differ with me. My frustration has not been at all with the executive director, and my frustration is not at all with the idea of a vigorous inquiry at the staff level. In fact, my concerns are the opposite. My concerns are with the slow, glacier-like pace of events. And as has been mentioned time and again by the fact that even before a charge is made, there are newspaper accounts, press comments, leaked documents. Even before there is even an accusation of anything. Now, if you look at the agenda that I just referred to for April, for example, where was that, Mr. Chairman?
Our consul has it. I'll get it.
I really want to tell you is that in our dealings with APOC in terms of our legislative mandate, what has disturbed me is that every time a politician talks in the open, and we're doing it all in the open now because of the new ethic and the decision of Judge Carbonetti, there's a kind of defensiveness from the agency that somehow, there are friends and enemies or a hit list here. And I really want to do whatever I can, and this is an opportunity for me to talk to one prospective commissioner and say this in the open, to get away from that, to let us have a dialogue about how the commission's work can be improved without being put in the posture of being in the pro-Pittman or anti-Pittman camp or, you know, for conflict of interest regulation or against it. I think I was the first state politician to recommend the creation of APOC in 1962. So, you understand what I'm trying to say. My perception is that people within the commission, or at least at the staff level, tend to look at any well-meant constructive criticism as a personal attack. And if you have picked up on that, I really want to knock that idea in the head. But looking at the agenda, for example, many of the agenda items are from 1985. Several are from their 1984 docket. And I can't say what the reason for those delays is. It may be not the fault of the staff. It may be that we have foot-dragging parties who are resisting subpoenas and inquiries at every step of the way and prolonging the agony. So I'm not in a position to say that, but it does seem to me that, the Alaska Public Offices Commission ought to be able to act as swiftly as Lawrence Walsh does in the Irangate matter, because it can't be more complicated than that. And yet we have dockets that are several years old.
Let me continue that just a moment. Mr. Dunnigan, I'm getting the distinct impression, and I think some of my colleagues are too, that you're being very defensive about certain people. This is not, we don't look at it that way. I would like to have you understand that we're looking at APOC, and you as just another member on it. You are just one member. You're not going to run it unless they choose to elect you as chairman, number one. I appreciate you being candid with us, but I would also, as you well know me, I will be very candid with you. And I have it on tape, that the commission has stated before that they really don't care what the legislature does. They're going to do what they want to do. I think we object to that violently.
Well, you should. Let me tell you something. I have no misapprehensions about being an elected public official. I am not. And there's a big difference. As a commissioner, and I said this to the House Committee, as a commissioner, it's my job to carry forward legislative intent. It's not my job to rework legislative intent. And if it gets to the point where I feel the election law is bad or unworkable, then it's not my job to rewrite it. If I can't enforce it the way it's written, I should deny it. And that's the point of view I'm taking. And let me go back to what Joseph was saying, that my main concern about APOC has been exactly what he's talking about. I think APOC gets bogged down in munitions, and we don't get the business done. I think we spent a lot of time looking through accounting reports 2-3 years ago when there really isn't an overriding public interest issue there. There's not really a disclosure issue there. We went through a lot of that in the initial stages of the Cooper campaign. He was trying to wrap up his previous unsuccessful campaign in an area where there was virtually no public interest, no public issues. We still had to invest literally thousands of dollars worth of man hours and time to solidify and put together reports and so on. It's very frustrating.
Well, now, I'd like to have you keep in mind throughout your...
It's a strong feeling that a lot of things can be done differently or maybe even not done at all as far as the commission is concerned. And that's the kind of... If I have to put an area where I personally would like to see some changes, that's it. Go ahead.
Yeah, I'd like to have you keep in mind, as we try to remind the commissioners all the time, that you're dealing with the reputations of those who go online for their state, their country, whatever you want to call it. And therefore, they should have every due process of law on every level. Now, for you to say that all this commission is for is to be sure that the disclosures are there, I would disagree with you. Your job is far more important and far more responsible than that. Reading is important. Understand both sides of it, not just what the commission gives you. And that's been some of the problems, I'm sorry, what the staff gives you. And that's some of the problems we've had in the past. To understand the position of those alleged accused is something very important, because you're dealing with their families, you're dealing with everybody else. And many, many families have been hurt because that wasn't taken care of, that wasn't considered. And again, I repeat to you, if you wish to do what you want to do, you're going to continue to be in trouble. Now, you can take the statutes, and I'll grant you that the statutes are not written the way they should be, and they should be tightened down. But nevertheless, that doesn't really mean that you can come in, and you being an attorney, and turn these things around to fit the situation to the extent that you promulgate regulations upon regulations over and over and over again until the meaning of them becomes... The real true policy of it is lost in the problem that you're trying to get solved with that regulation today. And those are some of the problems that we've had in all of the APOC. I've been accused of saying, well, I wanted to wipe it out. That's absolutely untrue. We need the APOC, but we need some prudent look-sees, if you will. We need somebody that's going to give fair... we need commissioners that are going to take an interest in each and everything that comes in front of them, if it takes 2 hours or 20 hours, because you're dealing with the reputation of those people that are either being falsely accused or not accused, but they're in front of you. Now, there must be a reason for them being in front of you one way or another. And then, second, and the end of it is that when you can't come up with anything because there's nothing to come up with, then instead of chewing on a bone that has no meat, you make a decision on it, and make a decision now. I can name you a number of people that have been accused of various and sundry things in APOC, and the APOC has never, they've never sat in front of them and said their side of the story. So that's where our concern is. So we're not looking for a witch hunt to dump anybody. We don't want to bring up anybody's name because it has nothing to do with it. You're a commissioner for the state, for the people. That's your job. And so we expect you to conduct yourself as honorably and as fairly as you possibly can. I guess that's one of the reasons that you were chosen to be on this commission, because of your fairness, I would assume.
Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman.
Yes, Joe, you have the floor. Senator Abood, also a State Affairs Committee Chairman, his yesterday or day before, a couple days ago, your confirmation was also transferred to State Affairs as well as Judiciary, which is the reason that we've asked him to participate at this time, hopefully to save time on Mr. Dunnigan. This is Mr. Joseph that wishes to...
Well, I agree with my colleague, Senator Abood, in part, and I guess I disagree in part. First of all, I support this nomination. I think that Mr. Dunnigan is a distinguished attorney, and I think he has an understanding of the process and administrative law. I agree with what the senator said, and I guess I've made that clear before, in terms of closure. Things never get closed. But I do not think that the problem is that APOC has promulgated too many regulations, Chuck. Matter of fact, I think there should be more regulations. The problem really is that the commission or its staff seems to make retrospective judgments about issues where there's been no definition of terms, no notice to people that the commission even was interested in that kind of a particular problem or subject matter. I think there should be more rulemaking that gives candidates and public officials more advance notice of what is permissible and what is not permissible. I just want to say that, Chuck, I can tell from this dialogue that you're aware of what kind of political plum the governor has just conferred on you.
Well, yeah, I expect it to be a little more difficult on the Senate side than it was on the House side, that's for sure.
See when he's coming back.
But I don't mind that. You know, I think that's part of the process. I'm not willing to come in and talk with you guys, settle with you, that maybe I shouldn't be a commissioner for you.
Probably that's the wisdom needed to become a commissioner. Senator Abood is curious when you might physically be returning to the state, Ms. Dunnigan.
Well, I'm putting it off as long as possible, but I've got a young lady here on a calendar, which makes it hard to see the calendar, but I believe that I'm going to be coming back on...
You want to go over that thing one more time?
He's sitting in a boat
room. May 16th. And our 17th, I'll be back in the office on Monday, May 18th.
Chuck, you want to call, you want to talk about that calendar and that girl one more time? We just kind of lost that in the transmission, I think.
She's wearing this very, very...
Now, that's enough, Chuck. That's enough. Hold it, Chuck. Hold it.
Thank you very much. Are there any other questions, Mr. Dunning, at this time? I, for one, think you're very well qualified. And,
Mr. Chairman, before
you have the floor, Senator.
Before Mr. Dunnigan leaves the line, I would move that the, unless there's other witnesses, that the committee execute the usual letter indicating
no
objection to the nomination without designating thereby how any individual member of the committee will vote in joint session.
There being no objection to that motion, that's adopted. I think probably you may wish to talk to Senator Abood. I'm not certain what his request may be from State Affairs. In any event, the Judiciary Committee has just adopted the motion that you heard proposed by Senator Joseph. And thank you very much for coming on today. And have a good trip and get the lady off the calendar.
Yes, sir.
Thanks again.
Thank you, Della.
Mrs. Whitaker is still holding out. She was going to be relatively quick. She was going to be a little bit behind.
She has kept playing. She does. What time? And we have the Alaska Public Services Commission nominee before us. And by teleconference, Kathleen Whitaker,
yeah, I mean, I guess
who has been appointed. And would you just give us a brief of yourself, Ms. Whitaker, for the benefit of the committee, and a little about your background and to which position you were appointed. Just a brief summary. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
First, let me thank you for accommodating my schedule this morning. I appreciate your trying to take me as soon as possible this morning. As far as my background goes, I have approximately 5 years of public accounting experience and have been in regulation for approximately 9 years, all of which has been with the Alaska Public Utilities Commission. Although the 3 years prior to my commission appointment, I spent most of my time in Washington, D.C., representing the commission with, well, actually representing all of the commissions, all of the state commissions in the country with the Federal Communications Commission in Washington. I've been in the business finance seat of the commission for a little bit over 2 years. I certainly hope that as a result of that, you have some feedback which will increase your level of comfort with my reappointment.
Are there any questions of Ms. Whitaker? I think the Senator Joseph now has the floor.
No, it's nice to talk to you again.
Thank you.
And I certainly support your renomination. I know of your accounting background and your skills in that area and the work you've done, so I'm pleased that you're available for reappointment. Did you have any comments that you think might be helpful to us in terms of any issues where the commission and the legislature interface, such as with respect to APA or other matters that the commission has addressed?
Senator Joseph said, I think that I believe our commission has taken positions on a number of bills that have gone before you. Generally, the way those positions are determined is that we have public meetings where we discuss proposed legislation and come to either a consensus or perhaps a majority position, and then that position is put forth by the chairman or his designee. I have to tell you, I've never been that designee. And although I may have personal opinions with respect to various matters, I have to honestly say I think it would be inappropriate for me not simply support the commission position. If you have some specific questions, I can certainly do my best to give you my opinion on them, but I have to respect the position that the commission is at least taking as a body right now.
Kathleen is at least a 25-year student and the person that essentially lobbied this original APUC legislation through, and then joined Gene Guest in making the board a full-time responsibility many years ago. I also understood the background of, in the capital system, as I said the other day on the floor, of a regulatory responsibility where you give unique convenience necessity to one company for doing business when there should be competition in theory out there. With that background, though, your regulation and your responsibilities out in the bush concern many people in the legislature, and as these very small companies go bankrupt almost in supporting rate changes and so on before the commission, it seems to me that everyone there ought to come up with some thoughts on how to fast track and greatly reduce the cost of small utilities doing the necessary rate work before the commission. And this is ridiculous when the total gross per year of some of these small companies is involved in legal services and accounting services of that commission. And under that, in that arena, you come under significant, not you personally at this time, but your commission comes under significant pressure. And the legislature is not too happy with those problems, so far as I can interpret. And rural groups are agitated with the commission, not over its big, major job so much as these more minor responsibilities. Do you have any comments as to how the commission may get together to recommend great change in handling these very small cases? Over.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more about having a concern. I have individually, personally, always tried to alleviate the burden on small utilities. When I was chief of the finance and tariff section, which is where I began with the commission about 9 years ago, we as a staff went out of our way to try to help the small utilities with their filings. If there was something they needed, we would try to give them examples of simplified filings, try to relieve the cost burden that falls on them of having to rely on consultants because they don't have in-house expertise. And along the way, we certainly have had numerous proposed regulations. For example, we have an order out right now having to do with the Federal Tax Reform Act of 1986 and what its implications are for the ratepayers. I was the person on the commission who really carried the banner for small utilities and said, let us not impose any requirements on them with respect to this until we take care of the first phase, which is where the large utilities will come in and show us whether or not rates should be reduced as a result of the federal tax rate reduction. What I felt was that the large utilities would be doing quite an analysis, even for their own purposes other than regulation, of the impact of the tax laws, and that our knowledge would increase substantially as a result of their filing, so that we could then determine whether there was any point in looking at small utilities and the impacts on them, and if so, how we could assist in the process to burden them as little as possible while still protecting the ratepayer. That is the type of thing that I really do think we do on a regular basis, and we'll continue to try to do. I think it's extremely important in weighing what is in the public interest to recognize that the ratepayer is not always protected by an investigation or increasing the burdens on the utility, because ultimately that burden will flow down to the ratepayer. So it's a matter of striking that balance. As far as suggestions go,
I actually don't expect immediate suggestions. I was thinking, though, that there might be a policy, and I don't think it's prohibited by law, of some suggestions that may even to be directed to the legislature for amendments to the existing law, et cetera, that will ease the burden on these small utilities vis-a-vis getting rate adjustments and other complaints resolved. We just quarterback ideas. Each area of the legislature, each person here has their own areas of expertise, but we need information with backup, and perhaps maybe it ought to be some time of the commission, some effort of the commission. And I hear you, at least I read into what you have to say, that you have been trying to do this and you have been working on this, and maybe you ought to bring to our attention some changes, statutory changes, that might be desirable towards this end. That's all I'm saying. And the only time we get a chance to talk to you in this posture is before you're confirmed. Generally speaking, commissioners forget our name universally, forget to answer phone calls immediately upon confirmation, so that's the reason I'm choosing this moment. Are there any other questions to the committee, Ms. Wicker?
Sure. Let me ask your name. Is this Senator Curtula?
Yes, that's correct, Kathy.
I wasn't exactly certain who I was speaking with. I thought I recognized your voice.
Actually, it was Senator Sturzluski. I'm just speaking for her. Yes, sure, Kathy.
There is something that is of great concern to me that I believe I would like to take this opportunity to speak to. And that is, quite frankly, that I do not like, I am unhappy with our rapport, shall we say, with the legislature. And I think that some of the legislation that has passed or is in the process of passing, and some of the difficulties that we've gone through in the last few years in Sunset are the result of an image which we have created, which I'm not going to try to suggest why that image is there, but I think that image needs to change. And if I am fortunate enough to be in a position of some authority within this commission to do that, I'm going to strive to improve that rapport. I think it's very important that you be aware of what our experience is teaching us and that we have credibility with you. That is to say that you believe that we are, that our explanations are not because we are trying to hang on to some sort of authority or not because we are power hungry in any way. I think that our lines of communication need to be more frequent and need to be more open.
Please answer your next letter. That's a good statement. Are there any questions of the commissioner? Do you wish a motion to be made? I would entertain one if there is one on the commissioner. Senator Halford?
Mr. Chairman, I move that we move out the standard letter with regard to Ms. Whitaker for consideration by the body with the normal language, which says that we don't commit ourselves on the final vote of the floor.
But no objection.
But have no objection.
The letter of no objection will be sent out. And thank you very much, and I appreciate you remaining there in this 120-day session. We, too, are terribly impacted. Thank you again. It's good talk with you today.
Thank you. I hope to see you soon.
Susan Humphrey Barnett's here, and is probably the last person that we should take up today, unless the body is
really
to continue. Excuse me? Not yet. Let's see how much time this is necessary. Maybe very little. You have the floor.
Okay.
We're off.
Good. As much as I'd like to be talking to you from the Florida Keys, I have a new appreciation of the benefits of being here in person.
The view.
I'm sorry, I do have to leave. The staff up at the Massu pretrial facility have made me the subject of a roast this evening, and I want to be there so they can roast me properly in person. Basically, the department right now, I see with the decreasing population pressures, I guess I see us turning inwards a bit and looking at quality. I would like to reach a point where, through various community correctional options, where we're closing in on a zero growth rate. I think that maybe within the next 2 to 3 years we can actually get there. We're doing things like case processing flow charts and identifying points at which people can be diverted, trying to determine why indigent people are remaining in jail on a pretrial status because they can't make a $50 bail or a $50 fine. And so we're just trying to take, as opposed to very broad and large steps, to small solutions that may divert a few people here and a few people there. And I think the incremental effect of those small steps will further decrease our rate of increasing population so that maybe we can get to a zero or close to a zero growth rate.
Well, bankruptcy is our problem with jails. The court commissioner in New York, who's retiring after 22 years up front, says he's not certain at all that incarceration provides any solution at all to the overall problem. He's very distressed upon leaving and reflection. Senator Sturgis-Lewski, yes,
Mr. Chairman, I'm delighted to see you here, Susan, and I'm very supportive. But a couple of questions, if I might. There seems to be kind of an ongoing battle with some of the management that actually manages the facility and then the commissioner. And that's been something that seems to have gone, say, your predecessor, and I don't know how things are doing now. But there are different philosophies toward how, obviously, correction facilities are run. And I'd like you to tell us, what is your relationship and what do you see happening there? Do you see that you're going to be able to bring about a more or less concerted approach in one direction toward the management of the facility?
I think so. I think you're very correct in saying that there is some tension. And what I'm finding right now, I'm trying to bring superintendents a lot more in on decision-making process. For whatever reasons, my predecessor didn't have that management style. And what I'm finding is that I guess with anything that where there's been sort of a lid on it, as you open it a little, it's sort of bubbling and boiling over a bit right now. I'm getting quite a lot of information about dissension of in certain areas. It's not department wide, but there's in certain areas there seems to be quite a lot of unrest. And so I think the way to deal with that is just continue on a very orderly process of bringing people into the decision-making process slowly, but I don't think that there's any way that you can... I think it would be a mistake to clamp down on dissenters really harshly at this point. I think basically if they see that they are involved in decision-making process, that gradually over time the bulk of them will be won over and feel that they have a part.
Mr. Chairman, it's also been very obvious that there are employees, these are not managers of facilities, but employers of employees that are really care about the system and have seen through, say, management of how prisoners are assigned and one thing or another, that the programs aren't working and feeling powerless, that all of a sudden a whole lot of things happen very suddenly, but there's never an opportunity really to make sense out of that. And I think there has been a good deal of, in certain areas, of employee unrest. Does that exist, and are you addressing that?
Yeah, I think it does exist to a certain degree. In some cases, not all, in some cases we have employees that are extraordinarily idealistic, and maybe what they're hoping for is just not possible on any realistic basis. On the other hand, there are employees that just want specific programs to get more attention, and they've got certainly a lot of good ideas on how to make those programs work better, and I think that can be dealt with, and their suggestions can be incorporated into the system. So it's a little of each.
What is your attitude toward both prison industries and education or access to education while incarcerated?
One of the major problems with our whole system is there's still a fair amount of idleness, and more so in some institutions than others. So I'm very much in favor of work programs and prison industries. The industries program has to walk a very fine line, it's almost a tightrope, between having a more than a minimal negative impact on the private sector and yet still trying to be self-sufficient on the other hand. And we find occasionally we flop off the tightrope on one side or the other. And that's, I've been talking to some of the labor leaders in the state recently, and I think we'll go back to having maybe meetings twice a year with the Commissioner of Labor and the Commissioner of Corrections and then labor leaders throughout the state to keep them informed of what inmates are doing and give them a forum to voice objections on our plans before they take effect, because I have found a fair amount of dissatisfaction.
I think you might include in that perhaps the members of Chamber of Commerce. For instance, I've seen the Chamber move toward, at least in our area, of some recognition of what education means, and they've started to look in, be more supportive of the university and the community college system. And I think education is going to be important. You'll come up against one small industry against another. It might be useful to bring that discussion in. You haven't spoken to education. I'm talking now basic skills, reading and writing GEDs and so on.
There are educational programs for basic skills in every prison, and then we've gone a step further in what we call life skills, and made four things mandatory to be offered in every prison. And we can't require the prisoners to take these, but we offer what I call an umbrella course called family skills, which includes parenting and interpersonal communication, budgeting, basic things that you would deal with in a family setting. we have another course, cross-cultural communication, which is a requirement. Also, pre-release skills, everything from how to banking and those kinds of issues, and how to do resumes, how to get jobs, how to keep jobs. And I'm missing one. Oh, stress and anger management also have to be taught.
I guess the final thing for right now, and thank you for your indulgence, I think that we added up with some extraordinarily heavy costs because of the Cleary case, and I think when things reach a point that the court starts to set terms, it is not necessarily with the sensitivity that, or it's not as realistic as it might be. Kind of a snapshot, how do you see the institutions now? How are we in this state? Are we building up to a problem, or are we identifying problems before they become subject to court cases? What's your overall feeling about management and where our correctional system is? You indicate we're getting a little bit less pressure in terms of people coming into the system.
Basically, I think we're identifying problems prior, but there are always going to be court cases. We've got new ones coming in daily. I've got some ideas for some legislative packages for next year that might lessen the financial impact of some of these things. We just settled the Neocop case, which is the Point Lay murder case, and that has a major financial impact on the state. Those kinds of things will probably continue. So I think we're being as proactive as we can be, or we will continue to be, but we'll always have some court cases.
We have a 3:30 meeting, Senator Helfer. I hope you can give us quorum before in and out.
Is AIDS a problem? Are you handling that?
Yes, it is a problem. It will continue to be in terms of, we will have AIDS patients. We do have one AIDS patient currently and a couple ARC patients and a number of HIV-positive individuals. And we do have a policy that I'm meeting with John Middow, the state epidemiologist, on Monday to finalize that AIDS policy. It's the full-blown AIDS patient is functioning quite well, and we got a federal approval to use the drug AZT, and he's responding pretty well to it. So,
thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Any other questions? I know you quite well. I'm personally very impressed with you. I want to say one thing. Please look into what I've seen in the New York Times recently, and that is our state's lack of support for separation of juveniles from adults. According to confirmation list, we're not very high on conformity to federal HOPE requirements and so on. The 6-hour maximum juvenile contact with adults and incarceration, 24-hour unacceptable. We're real bad on that list. I mean, real low.
Right?
Thank you very much. There's no further questions. I didn't think one.
Yes, just I would be happy to please make that motion. But one of the things that I believe I'm starting to see is that corrections is really going out of its way to utilize local in-state products. Is that correct in terms of Valley or Fairbanks produce and products from Alaska? Is that correct?
I believe it is.
Would you make that a note
to check that
in your purchasing of any place? I think
actually they had a history of Alaskan seafood.
Well, we understand. But I was thinking more of potatoes.
We grow our own potatoes.
Yeah.
I would frankly like to make the motion, but don't want to put my commissioners on the spot of using our more positive form of recommendation in this case. Okay. If there would be more
objection, the form that we could use.
I think there's another style.
Yes, the Senate Judiciary Committee considered Commissioner X appointments, and the committee recommends the full body confirm the following.
Yeah, in other words, not the one without objection, but full body.
If I'd only had that choice, I would move that on the PUC
Commission. That's fine.
We could do it on PUC
sure.
too. I think
okay. We will re-entertain a motion and delete all past references without objection. You have the floor on that too. So.
Mr. Chairman, I would move that the format for the recommendation for Ms. Whitaker be that the committee endorses the candidate for the
PUC. Then the letters for the commissioners of PUC and the commissioner of corrections will both be positive, as you have written. And the other one will be one of non-objection.
The commissioner of
PUC, commissioner
PUC
of corrections.
PUC and corrections.
Are positive.
Okay, can they go as they
now
are?
Now, those solve those problems.
Yes, well, we'll sign them as
that. Check that guy.
Oh, that really blew my mind.